All right, y'all, welcome back. Welcome back to another episode of Hashtag CB99 Talks. This is episode 85. Of course, I'm Combo Breaker 99. All right, y'all, back with another episode. Back with another one again, y'all. Man, we had a good week. You know, we've been having a pretty good week of fights, you know, going all the way back to last Wednesday. And that's pretty much what I'm going to do this whole episode. You know, I'm going to just kind of sit back here and just kind of talk about all of the fights of the past week from Wednesday to the time of this recording, which is what, Tuesday? Yeah, I'm doing this on a Tuesday night. So yeah, I want to go all the way back and just talk about some different fights here, just to kind of you know, go in, you know, and you know, talk about these different fighters that, you know, we need to look out for, you know. So yeah, man, we had a pretty good week, you know, last weekend, the weekend before that, you know, good fights, Marina Rodriguez, Yan Zhana, and all of that. You know, this weekend we had Mazo Maverick. Who else do we have? Jillian Robertson, you know, stepping in to face JJ Aldridge. Good fights, you know. And then we had the Bellator card, LFA card. And, yeah, like I said, Invicta FC going back to last Wednesday. So, yeah, man, I just want to kind of go back and review all of the fights, you know, just kind of give you my take on what happened in case you missed them and which fights you need to check out. We'll go back to Wednesday, Invicta FC. Then there was one WMMA fight on the LFA card, LFA 126. Then Bellator, there was the Afzerogova fight versus Batara, Kira Batara, which it was kind of a crazy fight, man. You know, I want to go back and talk about that definitely, man. But yeah, we'll go back in on those and, of course, the UFC fights. And at the end of the show, I just want to discuss some new videos I'm going to be working on, you know, as far as, you know, just kind of looking at, look at the bantamweight division, you know, as far as UFC goes, you know, the new fighters we need to be looking out for. All right. So, yeah, man. Yeah, last Wednesday, Invicta FC, you know, the card was solid. You know, it was a good one. It wasn't their best card, you know, of course, but it was definitely a good title fight. You know, Karina Rodriguez was taking on Diana Torcato in a rematch. And, you know, originally Torcato was fighting another opponent in the co-main event. But when her opponent pulled out, I think it was, what's her name, Souza? Yeah, Souza, Jennifer Souza, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong. She had pulled out. Torcato stepped up. You know, stepped in for the rematch. And I mean, Torcato, once again, you know, put on a good performance. And, you know, I got to talk about that decision when we get to it. But, yeah, overall, we had like five good fights, five decent fights. Of course, there's one on this card. You know, I had to do a video for it. Y'all already know which one I'm talking about. But first up on this card, we have Paulina Granados facing off against Monique Adrian. And Monique Adrian, you know, she pretty much pitched the shutout in this one. I think maybe you could argue one round with the Granados, but overall, I think Monique Adrian, I think she did enough to win all three rounds. I mean, she pretty much controlled this fight from the first round. Granados was game. Tried to go for the ground. You know, she wanted to get this fight down to the ground, but in my opinion, Monique Adrian, you know, I thought she was just as sharp. You know, she was just as sharp on the ground as she was on the feet. You know, very sharp with her hands. You know, the second round, she was landing some hard shots, really taking it to Granados, keeping her honest. Granados was really just taking a lot of shots that even in the third round, I thought that there could have been a point where it was going to get stopped, you know, because Adrian was not holding back. And she was letting some big shots go. Granados, she wanted to get the fight down to the ground. But like I said, every time she tried or she did, Adrian would look better. You know, she would either try to get the back or she would just get full on control. So yeah, that first fight was definitely all Monique Adrian. You know, she was able to score her first win in the Invicta FC, beat her to the head, to the body, wherever it was going, you know, stuffing takedowns with Granados and just finishing the fight strong. So yeah, that was a good fight. The second fight on the card, Christina Williams won a split decision over Flora Hani. Now y'all know, look, I'm cool with Flora Hani, but honestly, man, yeah, the fight could have gone either way. But I thought, man, I really did think that Flora Hani did enough in that third round. I thought she did enough in that third round to bag it. You know, I had to fight 2-1 for Flora Hani. I mean, you could argue, yeah, Christina Williams did enough in that third round with some of the combinations that she landed. But I just thought that, you know, she overall was getting hit with some damaging blows. You know, I thought that the commentators and even maybe like the judges were overlooking a lot of Florhani's shots, because I mean, Florhani was landing some good shots. Like, there were some good left hooks and right hands that I didn't even hear the commentators, you know, call out, you know. And so, yeah, I mean, going back and looking at the fight, like I said, I thought this fight was close. I thought Hani did enough to win, but it was kind of tight. Yeah, it was. But I just thought that third round, Hani, she did more work, and I thought she landed some damaging blows. I mean, the first round, Hani started off smart, trying to close the distance and land these hooks and keep it on the inside. You know, she was landing some nice right hands and left hooks every time she pressed in. But Williams, you know, she come back with some nice combinations, keeping the shorter fighter back, you know, throwing those straights and kicks. And they were landing. You know, Williams was eating some shots, but, you know, she was firing back to mix it up, you know, mixing up her combinations with kicks to the legs, head kicks. I think that Williams' work rate definitely won her the first round, you know, when she got into a groove and was keeping the smaller fighter back. And Hani, you know, she was landing some nice shots. So she definitely won the first round. Hani started closing in more behind her punches, you know, closing in more. But Williams, you know, she was still landing in bunches to keep Hani back. So finally, Florhani was able to shoot in, get the fight down to the ground, get in the guard, and work the body, keep top control. And I think she was trying to go for that, not submission, but I think she was just trying to go for that side control and, you know, really start to work her ground and pound. But the referee stood him up here. So I thought he kind of took away a moment while Hani was working. So, you know, Florhani went right back in after a right hand, you know, and then just pressed Williams to the cage, keep the fight in close, and just made it rugged. So I had it tied after the second round. I had it tied. But in the third, Hani, I think she, you know, turned it up to the body, started laying some good right hands. She started ending her combinations with leg kicks herself. You know, Williams was picking her shots more in this round. I thought, you know, Hani was landing more effective, though. A lot of those head kicks were blocked by Hani. You know, I thought Hani landed some nice left hooks, but she wasn't really getting credit for them, you know, as well as the right hand. You know, Williams, she was touching Hani, but I think, you know, I thought that, you know, overall, she landed the better shots. You know, I think Hani landed the better shots, you know, got in some good knees there as well. And then, you know, by the end of the round, there was a little burst from Hani landing some good knees and then landing that good right hand, you know, to just kind of, you know, cap off the round. But one judge had it for Hani, two others had it for Christina Williams. So I guess they saw what I saw, you know, but hey, it is what it is. Shout out to Florhani. And, you know, from here, she can go back to the drawing board and just get the work in. You know, I think she is trying to master that, you know, brute style, trying to get in and, you know, box her way in and, you know, use her wrestling. And that's what she's going to have to do, you know, a la like Jessica Andrade, you know, similar style. You know, she's going to have to deliver on the power more and, you know how to switch levels. You know, she works with Carla Esparza, so hopefully that's going to keep rubbing off on her, right? All right, next fight on the card. Let's see, we had Liz Tracy versus Danielle Taylor. Danielle Taylor coming back after that big knockout loss to Emily Ducote last year. And in some ways, I think it kind of showed in this fight that maybe a little something was taken from her. You know, she seemed a little gunshot. I don't know if it was just the awkward style of Liz Tracy, but, you know, I always thought Danielle Taylor had, you know, more skill than Liz Tracy because, you know, if you look at the level of competition they fought and if you look at some of the past fights with Danielle Taylor, her being a shorter fighter and having the shorter reach, you know, she's always kind of compensated for it, even against a lot of these Invicta fighters. But it seems like she was kind of holding back in this one. Like, you know, Liz Tracy is not the hardest puncher. You know, her main game plan was to get the fight down to the ground, you know, try to keep it on the outside and on the ground. But, you know, Danielle Taylor was really having trouble in this fight, I think. You know, I say, like, the first round, you know, Tracy started off with this awkward approach of just, like, circling and switching stances. Just, it's almost like a slide of eye thing where you really have to look hard to see that little transition that Liz Tracy makes if you're in the octagon. So maybe that's what was confusing Danielle Taylor, you know, because every time she was like circling to her right, you know, she'll gradually just kind of like transition into a southpaw, then transition right back into an orthodox fighter. And then, you know, she's shooting a straight left hand down the pipe or she's throwing a front kick at you. It's either the right leg is coming at you or the left leg is coming at you. You know what I mean? So she was just kind of switching it up on her. And I think that's what's kind of throwing off her rhythm, you know. And then finally, you know, Tracy was able to get a takedown, almost looked to got the finish in the first round, you know, with that ground and pound that she got on Danielle Taylor, and I think even getting the back of her in that first round, right? But most of the rounds, you know, Danielle Taylor was just really having trouble trying to land, and I think the stance switching was really making Taylor confused. She couldn't really get into it until she let off a good right hand and dropped Liz Tracy at one point in this fight. But, you know, Tracy recovered, got back up, and, you know, just went back to controlling the fight, You know, Taylor Ness never really had the urgency to close the show even by the third round. So I had a 30-27 as well for Liz Tracy. You know, Danielle Taylor, we'll see what's next for her, you know, going on, moving forward from here. You know, maybe that knockout did a little something to her, but we'll see moving forward to her next fight. All right, next fight, man. I already talked about this one, but, you know, I'll bring it up again. Diane Gomez versus Milana Dudieva. Y'all got to check this fight out, man. This was a good, solid, action-packed fight. You know, Dudieva, oh, man. You know, that's why they always say, look, anything can happen in MMA, anything can happen in boxing, whatever the sport, man, because Dudieva had a nice lead in this fight. Man, she had a nice lead in this fight, and she was back. She looked like she was back to action, you know, after, you know, being out from her pregnancy, you know, having a baby and everything, you know, came back. You know, looked in great shape, made weight, you know, came in here throwing bombs the first two rounds, you know, just really putting it on Gomez, you know, fighting behind a great jab, you know, that was landing her overhand right and her straight right hand, only to mess up by not going in for really going in for the kill the smart way when she dropped Gomez in the second round. Because the first round, I mean, she was putting it on her, you know, she was putting it on Gomez, you know, landing some good jabs, you know, just firing double, triple jabs down the pipe, landing her right hand, and, you know, just really getting that work in and getting takedown and almost stopping Gomez in the first round. When she got into that second round, she landed in the pair of right hands. I was like, okay, this should be it. But, you know, Dudieva kept on smothering her attack by getting on top of Gomez and smother, trying to wrestle. I was like, step back, separate. You know, you got to separate so you can land another one of those right hands and knock her out. But she gassed herself out at the end of the second round. Going into the third round, Gomez went in for the kill. She smelt it. She went in, just fired off like a barrage of hooks to the body, up to the head, to the, you know, knees to the head, till she finally dropped her. Referee was just letting this go on until finally, you know, he stepped in and stopped it. So, yeah, man, this was definitely the fight of the night on the Invicta card, in my opinion, you know, even better than the main event. You know, shout out to Dudieva, shout out to Gomez for putting on that performance. I think it really just came down to Dudieva overexerting herself and not going in for the kill the right way, as far as, you know, just landing the right hand again. Let your opponent stand up, load up that right hand once again, and boom, that's it. That's all you got to do, you know. I think, you know, she'll get that in her next fight, you know, because she's always going to be packing that power, you know, so she'll save it for the next opponent. I feel sorry for her next opponent that's going to come after. But yeah, man, the main event on this card, Karina Rodriguez versus Diana Tocato. Man, this fight was close. This fight was a lot closer than I think a lot of people on my community post said. You know, a lot of people thought Karina Rodriguez won. I ain't gonna lie, man. I could have seen Diana Tocato winning this fight, man. I just think Diana Tocato was really putting on a good, consistent, strength-based beating in this fight. I mean, Karina Rodriguez was boxing nicely, and I think she was doing well on these inside exchanges, but I really just like what Tocato was doing with the leg kicks, you know, the leg kicks and just the pressure against the cage. I mean, if you look back at the first round, you could see that Karina wanted to box, but Tocato wanted to bang, and she was landing these kicks. You know, Karina's right hand would land, you know, a little bit behind the jab, but Diana Tocato, she closed distance, and she was landing some nice high kicks and inside kicks. You know, Diana got the fight where she wanted. You know, she was able to get the fight where she wanted. I mean, Karina managed to get back up, but I think that first round, she was already kind of setting the pace. You know, Diana, you went into the second round fighting behind that calf kick, continue to attack the leg and just keep range well and make Karina miss a lot of those shots wide. You know, Diana, I thought she pressured nice, got in some nice, you know, nice body lock to control Karina, get the fight back down again in the half guard and just control on top, you know, and then just really keep the pace going, her kicks and her takedowns, and take those first two rounds. You know, I know this is probably where the pace changed for some people. I had a 2-0 for Diana Tocato going into the third round, but third round, Karina, you know, she was taking more chances here, and that's where she usually succeeds. Like, her boxing is good on the outside, but when she starts to bang with you, you know, Karina does land better shots. And her taking more chances, she was able to catch up and keep Diana honest a little bit here. You know, Diana was still clinching and working big knees to the body, but Karina was, you know, in the fight here. She was in the fight by the third round. You know, I think Diana's pressing her was really starting to wear on her. You know, she was showing that strength by kind of tossing her. But, you know, Karina was able to bounce back up, use her range. Diana's knees to the body and a leg attack to me was still controlling. So I could see, okay, where some of y'all had it for Karina Rodriguez in the third, but I had a 3-0 right here. I basically had to fight one. You know, I had a 3-0 for Diana Torcato looking at it. Maybe I'll look at it again, but I don't know. Fourth round, you know, Karina, she started to pressure more here, land her right hand, land in the clinch, use her own knees. Diana here, she was not landing with the same intensity. She did kind of seem to take it down a little bit. She was still landing some kicks, but, you know, Diana Torcato, she did get in another takedown, but Karina, I thought she managed to get out of danger, you know, before any ground control time could take place. She was able to fight her off. This is where Karina turned it around. She won that round. I mean, you could kind of see it in her face that she knew she might have been down. You know, she had that look like, I never know what's going to happen here. I know it's open score, but a couple times Wednesday night, they had a few hiccups where they had to say, you know, I meant this person, you know, how they had to kind of switch it around. But going into that fifth round, I think Karina, you know, she needed to finish to me. But of course, you know, going by the open score, and she didn't. So Diana Torcato, she had to turn it up, and she did. She started landing a few right hands, you know, a couple of leg kicks. But Karina, you know, she was defending here more so, landing some hard body kicks. Karina's best work to me was actually on the inside, where she would land those right hands and elbows every time Diana would clinch up. And I think Diana Torcato kind of lost her momentum. She did in this round. That's why Karina started landing more. You know, Diana was still game, but she didn't close out strong. So I think this is where Karina, you know, she won the last round with that attack. But I had it 3-2 for Diana Torcato. But yeah, 3-2 for Karina. You know, I could see that if you gave that third round to Karina Rodriguez. But I thought that, you know, it was a very hard fought fight. In my opinion, I think Diana Torcato does offer something to be in the UFC pretty soon. You know, I know she was on the losing end, but something about her style and her attack, I think it could be very effective in a grappler-heavy division like the flyweights, you know. Karina Rodriguez is good, too. You know, I want to see her sign, of course. You know, I want to see her get in there. But I think Diana Torcato fought a good fight to promote herself, to make people say, hey, she needs to be in the UFC. So both of them need to be signed. But, you know, I was impressed with the style that Torcato brings to the table. You know, very, very strong, good leg attack, you know, good on the ground. And I think that'll come in handy going against some of these flyweights moving forward, you know. So, yeah, shout out to both fighters. Shout out to Torcato, the performance she put on. Shout out to the champion for defending her belt once again. But, yeah, man, those were the Invicta FC fights. Like I said, you definitely got to watch Dudieva versus Gomez. That was a good one. That was a good fight, man. But let's go over to LFA 126, this bantamweight fight. That was on the main card. Let me see. It was Keila Braga versus Tamiris Vidal. Ooh, this was a good one, man. I mean, I like the style of Braga. You know, I'm a stand-up fan, and I got to talk a little bit about Keila Braga. Unfortunately, you know, Vidal, she won the fight. Of course, you know, I mean, I'm a fan of her style more so Braga because she's a boxer. You know, she is a pro boxer. And Vidal, you know, she's more of the brawler in there and the submission artist. But, you know, it was a good fight, though. It was a good fight. You know, I got to give Vidal credit because, you know, she got pieced up the first two rounds and, you know, never stopped coming, you know, got picked apart, you know, until that part of the second round where she, you know, closed the distance and got the fight down to the ground where she wanted it. And, you know, she was able to submit Braga. You know, I thought Braga was comfortably winning, comfortably in her groove. But again, this is MMA. You never know how it's going to go. This was like the Dudieva fight a little bit here, you know. Braga, first round, she was using her boxing, you know, keeping good range and just making Vidal miss. Every now and then, Vidal would get in a body kick or two. But for the most part, Braga was just sticking straight right hands and straight shots down the pipe, sticking and moving. Vidal was closing in with the right to make it dirty, but Braga was just too quick. She would break. You know, I just love how Braga was using her angles here, just touching with the jab and cracking Vidal every time she tried to come in. You know, she was stopping her in her tracks with front kicks to the body and good right hands. Like, you could see the power. Like, Braga would land these shots, and, you know, Vidal would just kind of freeze up, you know, from a kick to the belly or something, you know. Vidal, she did snag a takedown and almost got in a guillotine. But, you know, Braga, she kept the pressure off of her neck, and she was able to get out of it. So she was in no real danger. But it was in that last round, man. Braga, Yeah, man, she went back to boxing, you know, sticking and moving, looking good. You know, Braga was staying light on her feet, get in and out to avoid the takedown attempts from Vidal. But, man, Vidal, she pushed her way into a clinch, got to the cage. You know, Braga was strong. You know, she was trying to break. She did break that first time, went right back to picking her shots, you know, picking Vidal apart. But Vidal got another takedown, got the full mount. But this is where I was impressed with Braga. You know, she was on her back. You know, she was on her back, but she was still fighting. You know, she never stopped hand fighting, and she was still dragging her way to the fence. Like, Vidal put the full mount on her, right? But Braga was still dragging her way to the fence, fighting off, you know, with one hand, not eating. She was not eating too many big shots here. She got her back to the fence. When she got her back to the fence, she was able to turn her hip, right? And when she turned her hip, she was able to escape, and she did like a push kick to knock Vidal back. But Vidal didn't go flying back. You know, Vidal was still locked in. She was still in like a already established leg lock, right? So Vidal locks in a heel hook just like that. Like when she kicks it back, she just says, okay, we're intertwined this way. Boom. She grabs Braga's leg, start twisting that heel hook, and Braga just tapped just like that. You know, I was like, oh, man, you know, I didn't see it coming. It was just such a light looking submission. But I guess the pain was there because Braga was like, oh, let go. You know, she was like, I'm done, you know. So, yeah, man, I shout out to Vidal. It was a good fight. I just thought that Braga, you know, she had the skill set in the stand-up game. And that's one thing I want to say. Like, this fight, it was a bantamweight. And I think that both of these fighters, they offer something for the UFC bantamweight division, which is another video I got coming soon. But, yeah, I think that Vidal, you know, was very tricky in this fight. But it was something about Braga's style. You know, I think Braga's style would be great for the UFC. I just think that... you know, even though she lost, there's a few things that, you know, if she polished up, like the way she, you know, this is just like one of those freak submissions, you know what I mean? Like, you were doing everything right, but then, boom, you know, you just, your opponent happens to be in the right place and they get you, you know what I mean? Like, I can't really say she showed, like, a great deal of weakness, of course, just on the ground at that moment, but I think Brock offers a lot, man, moving forward if she could just tighten up, you know? She still, yeah, she looks good on the feet as far as her striking, and I think that's something that, you know, the UFC is going to need maybe after she works, you know, for another couple of years in LFA. Same goes for Vidal, you know what I mean? Like, if she tightens up, you know, even her defense, because even though she's, you know, submissions on the gets her submission on the ground, she was getting hit a lot, you know, so we'll see where it goes for her from here. So, yeah, definitely check that fight out. It was on LFA 126, the main card. Last fight I want to talk about from, you know, let me see this one. No, this wasn't from Friday. This was actually Saturday. Yeah, not Friday, but Saturday, because Diana Asavagova and Kira Batara. Yeah, this was actually playing on Saturday because I think I pulled it up while I was doing a live stream with y'all. Yeah, I pulled it up while I was doing a live stream. It was already like in the middle of the fight, so I just wanted to go back and talk about it a little bit. Yeah, Diana Asavagova, you know, she moves on to 5-0 now against Kira Batara. Shout out to Kira Batara. You know, I've seen her fight before, man. She's been in the game for a minute, and you know, I like this girl, you know what I mean? Like, she's still got a lot of work to do. You know, she's been around, hasn't fought like the best fighters. You know, I think she fought Paulina Granados a while back, and I think she beat her like maybe like 2 or 3 years ago. But I like her, man. You know, she comes to fight, and I mean, it's a little bit sloppy, but she'll be good. She pushes you. And that's what she did to Asavagova, man. Asavagova, you know, though she is ranked in the Bellator flyweight division at 5-0 now, you know, I think there's still a lot of work to be done with her, you know, with only 5 wins, you know, not the best competition here. But I think she handled Kira Batara the best that she could, you know what I mean? Like, Batara, from the jump, this girl rushes right in. I mean, I'm talking like she... I couldn't help but kind of just laugh because it was like Batara just rushed in like she was in a brawl, you know, like she wanted to get this fight down to the ground and she took off almost sprinting at Diana Asavagova to catch her off guard. And shout out to Diana. I mean, she defended the attack well. You know, Batara, she winds up pushing the fight to the cage, trying to get Diana down. But Diana just had the size and the strength here, and she was able to break a lot and just go to sticking and moving. You know, this helped her work on her strike. You know, granted, she didn't have that power that she did in that one knockout against Tara Graf, but she was landing some nice shots in this fight to try to keep Batara honest. But Batara, she ain't stopping. The first round, she kept coming, and she kept getting tagged. I mean, going into the second and third rounds, pretty much the same. You know, Diana was just really, like, controlling and outlanding with these combinations, because Batara just trying to run in. She want to fight. That's all she want to do. She want to fight, get you to the ground, and try to, you know, ground and pound you, beat you up and submit you. But Diana Sarigova, she wasn't having it. You know, she was just controlling on her feet, using the longer strikes to keep that, you know, keep that range and keep that beam on her, you know, landing good shots on Batara. You know, Batara, very sloppy, man. Just very overall sloppy. You know, she was busted up by the end of the second round. Like I said, going into the third round, she ate a big right hand that almost knocked her out. I think it was the end of the second or third round, but she had a big right hand and she looked about out, you know, because she was walking into a lot of shots. I mean, it was like watching, you know, this little Joe Frazier type machine, you know, without the actual skill of like Joe Frazier, but it was just like her tenacity and her that consistency of it was just like a train. You know, she was running at her a few times and I was like, man, this girl wants to fight. But, you know, Diana Sarigova said, no, we ain't going to do it like this. We're going to keep this thing on the outside and, you know, I'm going to just piece you up. So, yeah, she did what she was supposed to do. You know, after Sarigova was still green in my eyes. And I don't know, like, how close she's to, I don't know how close she is to getting, like, a fight with Alima Lay at 5-0 or even, like, the champion Juliana Velasquez or even Denise Kielholz. Those are the best of the division. That's why it just seems like there's such a divide there. Like when you see somebody that's like 5-0 in the UFC, they're unranked, right? That's what it is. But it's like with Bellator flyweights, there's just not as many. So, you know, there's more room for fighters like Laredo and Avzera Gober to get in there, right? Because there's not as many fighters. So the talent is going to be kind of mixed up and not for the best. Right, you're gonna have a lot of green fighters close to veterans like that. Like Vanessa Porto, to me, should be ranked higher than Avzera Gober and some of these fighters, but I think she's actually ranked lower, right? So it is what it is, and we'll see where it goes from here, y'all. But yeah, man, that was a Bellator's only WMMA card or women fight on the card. That was a lot of fights though, man. It was just a lot of fights I've been watching, you know, over the past few nights. Like I keep thinking like there's some other fights that I missed, but yeah, like Invicta FC. You know, it's already been about a week at this time of this recording. You know, then, like I said, just so much going on in LFA. And what else? Yeah, like Bellator. And, of course, you know, I already did videos talking about the fights this past Saturday. You know, shout out to, yeah, let's talk about it a little bit for the show. You know, J.J. Aldridge versus Jillian Robertson. I was pretty much sold on J.J. Aldridge's technique and her skill set to go in there and just outmatch, outskill, and out, you know, outstrike Jillian Robertson when it came down to it, you know, because J.J. Aldridge has been working. You know, I had the question mark over, you know, over her head a little bit about her takedown defense, but I've been seeing some videos. I was looking at some footage and, you know, her training sessions, and, you know, she's been working on her strength. I just needed to see it executed, and she did that, you know. First off, you know, J.J. Aldridge, her striking was on point in her fight. In this fight, you know, she was on point with the jab, using the range, just picking apart Jillian Robertson. Overall, just good work, you know, even scoring takedowns of her own and, you know, nullifying Jillian on the ground. You know, she was just in it. You know, she got her 30-27 on. You know, that's what you got to do if you want to advance. And I think J.J. Aldridge is ready. You know, I think she's ready for a top 15. Like I always say, you know, if you can get your 3-0 in the unranked realm, get your top 15 next. You know, whether or not, like I said, people think that she can beat some of these top 15, that's not the point. It's not the point on what you think. It's about what the person's earned. You know, so if they go through the test, they pass these three people, you know, it's time to get it. It's time to get it. Now, like I said, I don't know if she can beat Erin Blanchfield, but she, you know, she for sure shot, earned that fight, right? So, yeah, as for Jillian Robertson, though, you know, I just think she got work to do, man. Like, yeah, I like the fact that she was trying with her striking and she was trying to get a little bit more comfortable with her kicks. But the next thing is you got to hit something. You know, you got to hit something. And I think she was, you know, not measuring her range well. I don't really think it comes down to her reach. You know, I really think it just came down to the fundamentals. You know, you got to connect. That's something she had to work on drill after drill. You know, they need to spar more. They need to go hard. She needs to get a butt kick when it comes to being on the feet, you know. So she needs that. I mean, you can say all day that she's a specialist, you know, on the ground, But if you don't have some decent hands and that something that can put it together, bridge the gap, like you're wrestling, then you probably won't go far, you know, and that's not to be funny. You probably won't, because, you know, you're not being true to yourself and saying, hey, you need to work on this, or hey, this sucks. You need, your hands are trash, or, you know what I mean? Like, you got to get this up to a level where we can climb, you know what I mean? We can climb this flyweight division, right? That's all I'm saying. Like, there's no hate with these fighters. I enjoy watching Jillian submit people, but from here, I would like, since I'm a fan and I like to watch her finish people, I'd like to see her finish people on a higher level, because that means more money and more opportunities in the title shot, right? That's what it comes down to for me when I discuss Jillian Robertson, you know? See, I think JJ has been putting it together, you know, the wrestling. That's why she was able to get a takedown and even look good on the ground and use her strength. Wrestling, her boxing is always on point. That's why she's looking like, you know, somebody that deserves a top 15 fight, you know? Moving forward from here, you know, I think Jillian is still going to be taking on some unranked fighters next. I would like to see JJ in there with Erin Blanchfield next. You know, some people say Jessica Eye. I'm not mad at that. But Jessica Eye, I can't really put her name out there because it doesn't look like she's healed up or even ready to go. So if JJ's ready to return by summer and she's not, then why not just be Erin Blanchfield, right? That's how I see it. But yeah, man, what else? What else? What else going on with these two that I wanted to talk about? Yeah, real quick with Jillian Robertson, though. Jillian Robertson, it's being discussed a lot, you know, around the way about Jillian Robertson, if she should move down to 115. Of course, I put the post out and everybody thinks that she should move to 115. Of course, I don't think so. I just kind of thought that because, you know, some people ask me, you know, should she be at 115? Is she too small? Is she not strong enough? You know, I think she's losing because it's the weight class. You know, so I asked everybody. It seems like everybody thinks she needs to move down to strawweight. And I heard the commentators mention something about strawweight as well. And I was like, huh. I was like, really? A really strong weight? But I was like, you know, looking at her and, you know, J.J. Aldridge, like, you know, J.J. Aldridge looks a little bit thicker, but they look like they're about the same size, you know? Courtney Casey's not really that big. I mean, Courtney Casey's long and tall. And I think about, what, 5'7"? You know, and she looks like a fighter that, you know, if her skills are polished, she could still handle her own at 125. And Jillian Robertson's not too far from that, I don't think. So, you know, when it comes down to it, I don't really think it is a weight issue. I don't think it is a size issue. And you know why I say that? Because we haven't seen Jillian Robertson put enough skills together where we can say, okay, wrestling's not working for you because you're too small, you're getting ragdolled by big girls, or your boxing's not working because your reach is too short and you're just getting hit with these hard shots and your body can't take them, right? Your punch resistance too low for this division. We haven't been able to see that, right? I mean, of course, he was stopped by Macy Barber. That's Macy Barber, right? But other than that, we haven't seen Jillian Robertson put enough tools together to say that she's outgunned and outmatched by bigger girls. It all goes back to what I said. It all goes back to what I was saying about Jillian Robertson. She needs to add more tools to her game. And then you'll see a better version of Jillian Robertson. And then we'll see if Jillian Robertson is too small for this division, because then she'll be able to test new things like, you know, clinch work, wrestling, like I said, taking punches more, you know, by staying in the pocket, or even just boxing and seeing if you could hurt fighters once you commit more to your punches. So I really don't think it is a weight thing. I think Jillian Robertson is fine at 125. I do, you know. So everybody who disagree, you know, give me reasons why. I mean, when you look at her, like, she's 5'5", you know, she's lean, but at the same time, you know, she definitely has some size to her. You know, she definitely has some pretty decent size. Ain't like she's too slim. You know, she looks a little bit thicker than Joanna, and we say Joanna needs to be at 125, right? So with her having a little bit size, you know, I think she just needs to use it in the right way. Like, how can we say that she's too small whenever we can obviously see that she can't get a lot of takedowns because she doesn't really use wrestling, right? I think it just comes down to her committing more to add more to her game, you know, polishing up her hands and bridging that gap of using her wrestling to get her takedowns, you know, working on her grappling and become a stronger fighter, because she could have got fighters down and submitted them and or outstruck fighters like Taylor Santos and Miranda Maverick, but she was out gunned on the ground, but mostly basically because of strength. You know, if you look at how Taylor Santos was putting it on her and how Miranda put it on her, it was like, wow, you know, like this girl needs more strength and she needs some strength and conditioning, like a strength and conditioning coach that could help her really build her overall strength up, and, you know, maybe even help her on how to distribute her power, you know, and work on her core, you know. So I think Jillian Robertson is fine at 125. I think the weight is fine. You know, I think it's just the skill sets. I just think it's the skill set. She needs to add more to her game. That's all it is. Now, if you look at somebody like Cynthia Calvillo, I'll argue all day and tell you she needs to be 115. You know, you just see she looks like a 115er. You know, to me, Cynthia Calvillo, you know, she's already stepped it up at a higher level. You've seen how she was able to handle it. Like, she couldn't handle the size, the height, and the length of a Caitlin Chikagan. You know, she could never get in on the reach or even outbox Caitlin Chikagan or even get her down to the ground, right? She couldn't even get her down to the ground. And then she couldn't even hurt or get the respect of Jessica Andrade. You know, she literally said that it was like, whoa, when she got in there with Jessica Andrade. Like, you could see, like, she switched gears. Like, oh my God, this is Jessica Andrade coming at me. Like, this is a powerhouse. I don't think I can hurt her. Like, you could actually see it in the demeanor. So we know she didn't have that. And then she didn't even have the grappling. You know, she didn't have the grappling to nullify these fighters, like the physical strength to get in, like the imposing size, like a Jennifer Maia or a Lauren Murphy. So when you look at her, it's been tested. Like, the striking's not going to hang with the long fighters. The grappling's not going to hang with the strong fighters, you know, long and strong fighters, you know. So Calvillo's going right where she needs to be. Calvillo's going back down to 115. But Jillian Robertson, I really don't think it is like size with her. You know, her dropping down to 115, that might even hurt her. You know, I know she's only 26, but shoot, that still might hurt her. You know, I think that might hurt her chances of, you know, having any type of success on the ground. So I think she's fine where she's at. It's all about the skills with Jillian Robertson. I mean, this might be a full-on video. I might chop this part out so we can talk about it, or y'all can talk about it in the comment section. But that's what I think. I think Jillian Robertson is fine where she's at. 125 is fine, and it's all about, you know, getting maybe, like I said, a strength and conditioning coach that's going to help her advance. You know, like there's one I follow, you know, he was former strength and conditioning coach for Errol Spence, you know, boxing champion Errol Spence, Blu-ray Fitness. Check him out on Instagram. He puts his fighters through, you know, some of the most intense strength and conditioning drills, like having like Errol do like, what, 700, 1,000 push-ups or sit-ups and these crazy like pull-ups. Like, I just got like exhausted looking at these workouts. But when he was with Errol, like the strength, you could see like the strength that he put in this guy, like how he would get stronger from the first round to the 12th round. Like, that's the type of strength and conditioning coach that you need, like if you move up in weight, I think, you know, or if you're lacking that strength to, you know, take on grapplers. You know, I think that Jillian Robertson needs that type of guy that can help push her and help her get stronger throughout fights, or just be strong in general, you know, and help her distribute power, you know, throughout her body, you know. So, yeah, man, I think that's what it is, because there's just not enough tools that we've seen, like I said, to say, oh, this girl's too weak and too small for 125. You know, no, because you see how she'll submit the long, big girls that on the lower level, like she'll submit Molly McCann, she'll submit Priscilla Cachoeira, she'll submit Courtney Casey, she'll take down Poliana Bateo. And Poliana Bateo, look how thick her thighs are. You know, she's like a good size 125er, you know what I mean? So I think on that low level, she's shown those skills is against those type of fighters, but there just needs to be more tools added to her game. That's all it is. I think she's fine where she's at, you know? Not too far off from Andrea Lee's frame either, in my opinion. I think Andrea Lee's a bit longer and taller, but maybe by an inch or two, but, you know, not too far off. So, yeah, man, that's my thoughts on Jillian Robertson. I think that G-Rob is fine at flyweight. I know a lot of y'all don't. Y'all going to disagree, so give me some points on why, but I think my argument is pretty solid. You know what I mean? Like, once you see more tools from her and they still won't work for her, then I think it's time to move down, all right? So, yeah, man, Last topic for this show. Let's go back. Shout out to Miranda Maverick. You know, we'll talk about it on this show a little bit as well. You know, Miranda Maverick, she did her thing. I know it might not seem like a big statement maker to everybody, but it should be, because, you know, a lot of people picked Mazo to win, I think, you know, not on the community poll, but some of y'all thought that Sabina Mazo was going to head kick Miranda Maverick into oblivion, which she didn't. You know, some of y'all thought Miranda Maverick was hopeless, right? Y'all know who I'm talking about. Y'all thought Miranda Maverick was hopeless. Y'all thought she didn't have the skill to even beat Sabina Mazo, but she showed she did. And it was a statement maker, in my opinion, because of the fashion that she won it in. And again, like I said, you know, proving people wrong, you know, coming back after two fight losing streak, you got to make a statement by erasing some of the doubt that you had. And that's what she did. You know, as for Sabina Mazo, you know, I just think Sabina Mazo, man, like LFA is calling and Invicta FC is calling. You know, there's still some work she has to do. You know, I think on that lower level, she needs to kind of build up her work rate, her kill switch, you know, go back in there and try to revamp herself, because when you're on the UFC level, you ain't gonna really have time to think. You know, like Agapova, she took it to her. Alexis Davis, Miranda, they all took it to her, because they're going for something else. You know, they're moving. And I think, you know, Sabina Mazo, if she wants to reach that level, man, she's got to go back to the drawing board. I mean, you know, ain't nothing bad about it. I mean, Liana Jojua did. I mean, Mazo's still in her 20s, so why not? You know, Liana Jojua, you know, she got signed premature, and, you know, she's gone. She got cut. Now she's trying to work her way back. So I think Mazo at 0-3 in her last three fights, you know, if she gets cut, that's just a sign of saying, hey, we got to work. It's like whenever you fail a class, right, you got to go back and study. So I don't think there's anything harsh from that. You know, Miranda definitely showed that she had some good skills about her on her feet. You know, of course, like I said, that is Mazo, but that's what we wanted to see. I think Miranda maybe needs one more unranked fight before she gets her top 15. You know, Ariane Lipsky, somebody like that. And we'll see where it goes from there. So, yeah, man, good flyweight fights last weekend. Let me see. What do we got this weekend coming up? We've got Corey McKenna, Elise Reed. We got Luana Carolina versus Molly McCann. I know some of y'all asked me to do a breakdown for those fights, which I might. Might do a breakdown like on Thursday. Let me see. Corey McKenna, Elise Reed. No, we got Molly McCann and Luana Carolina. And those are the only women's fights that we got on this card, y'all. Yeah, those are the only women's fights we got on this card. This is the London card, right? Yep, London card. Patty Pimlet's on this card, of course. Everybody loves him, right? But yeah, that's what it's looking like. So yeah, last topic. Yeah, I'm gonna be doing a video, man, and just talking about the well, it's more of a full-on topic. It's just more of a you know, little announcement thing. I'm working on a video, man. I just want to talk about the bantamweight division and some fighters that the bantamweight division needs to keep it thriving, as well as I don't want to say just the fighters that are unsigned. I want to talk about the fighters that are already signed as well. You know, I'm going to do like a top seven video on the bantamweights that's going to help the UFC bantamweight division thrive. You know, signed and unsigned. You know, signed and unsigned. I think the fighters that are really going to help push it towards, you know, putting life back into it once fighters like, you know, Nunes, Pena, Holm all retire, right? You know, Konaskaya, Kelleviria. Once they all retire, you know, I see like a group of a crop of fly bantamweights coming up. You know, I'll do this video, and then I'll, you know, just kind of break that down to y'all on why I think these fighters, you know, have that blood that's going to get the division thriving, if that makes sense. Yeah. So, I've just been watching a lot of bantamweight fights lately, you know, a lot of unsigned fighters, as well as, you know, some of the fighters in the division, you know, so, you know, on the lower level. And I was just like, yo, you know, we need to see more of these fighters. Like, we need to see more of these fighters that are in the UFC fighting consistently at 135. And we also need to see these other girls that I'm talking about, which I'll bring up in this video, you know, these ones that aren't signed that need to be signed ASAP. And y'all already know one of them. Let's put it that way. Y'all already know one of the fighters I'm talking about that needs to be signed to 135 ASAP, because this division is pretty dry. I mean, even with Pena winning the belt, yeah, it definitely wakes it up in a different light now. It puts it in a different light, you know, since Nunes' reign is over for now. But it still needs to grow, man. We still need some new fighters once they all retire, like whenever Holmes retired, like I said, you know. So, yeah, I'm coming with that video. Do a top seven. So, yeah, man, that's pretty much all I got on this episode, guys. Yeah, it is fight week, so I'll be doing, you know, videos and predictions for, you know, these fights coming up this weekend. Next week's episode, we'll be talking about, of course, Jennifer Maya, Manon Fiore, and JoJo Wood and Alexa Grasso. We'll say that for the next one. So, yeah, man, final thoughts on this episode. Yeah, I think it just comes down to a lot of these fighters in the, you know, in the lower part of the flyweight division and fighters in general, where they have to really understand how important it is to put more than one skill set together. You know, you just can't be a specialist your whole life or your whole in the division forever. You know what I mean? Especially if you're not like a freak of nature with it. You know what I mean? Like if you're not like this striker with freakish speed and work rate and stamina, or this striker with freakish power, or this, you know, submission artist with physical strength where you just slam people and get them out of the way. If you're not that type of specialist, then you have work to do. You have to add more tools to your game, right? Because if you haven't advanced and your resume is still looking the same and you ain't ranked, I think you need to start questioning yourself or getting with the right people to say, hey, what do I need to work on? What is it I lack? Why am I still unranked? And they'll tell you. It's like on this channel, I'll tell you. You know what I mean? Like I said, I'm a fan of fighters, but I'm not a yes man where I'm going to just say, oh, yeah, this person's perfect. You know, this person is a 10 and that person's like 7-9. You know what I mean? Or they're unranked. And I'm going to keep saying they're the best in the world. No, I ain't going to say that because I'm a fan of the fight game first. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, I ain't going to disrespect you and call you crazy names, but, you know, if I see this person's lacking this, then I'm going to say it. You know what I mean? Because that's what's real, right? So, yeah, man, that's what it is, y'all. Also, another video I got coming. You know, I'm working on this video. You know, y'all brought it up. Well, I brought it up, and y'all, we kind of talked about it in a live stream. A specialist versus a one-dimensional fighter. What's the difference? You know, the specialist and one-dimensional mean the same thing. Well, we'll talk about it in this video I got coming, y'all. So yeah, make sure y'all subscribe to the YouTube channel Combo Breaker 99. Subscribe to this show #CB99Talk on Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, iTunes, Tuned In, all of that. And yeah, just do that, guys, and leave a good review for me. Like I said, if y'all do that, subscribe and hit the thumbs up. I keep talking WMMA with y'all, because that'll show y'all appreciate it, right? So, yeah, like always, guys, Combo Breaker 99. I am out. I'll see y'all in the next one. Subscribe. Peace.